Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your guest host today, Gabriella Von Ray, and your host is Alan Cardoza, who cannot be present today. Each week, this show addresses issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Alan has over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis. He has been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. We are looking for show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media. We truly appreciate it, as this is another way you can make a positive difference in the lives of others. And I'm grateful to be once again your guest host. And a little bit of background about me is that I am known as a kindness expert, author, and speaker, and the founder of the Dare to Be Kind movement. I always try to be the difference in other people's lives. I am also a published author of 3 books and have been seen on many TV stations, including nationals. I speak at school assemblies and corporate events across the US and in Europe, spreading positive messages like this one. Now is the time for kindness to grow more kindness. Our mission is a safer world. Our method is kindness, and the vehicle is you. If you want to find us, just type Dare to Be Kind. Now, back to our topic of today. Our guest is John Alok, and the topic The title of today's 40 Things I Wish I Told My Kids, Mindful Messages About Success and Happiness. Most of us really worry about things that never happen. Yet worrying takes up so much of our time and energy and attention. We are often victims of our own thoughts. We automatically assume that those thoughts are true, when in fact, they often are not. The good news is that we do not have to be stuck with whatever thoughts arise. We can change them. With our guest today and in his new book, 40 Things I Wish I Had Told My Kids, John Alok will present the essentials of mindfulness, not as something special and exotic, but as something practical and truly down to earth, principles for living and overcoming the thought trap. I learned that John has succeeded big time, and he also failed big time. He has shared publicly that what seemed at first like some of the worst things in his life were what began to wake him up, explaining that those failures and difficulties helped him realize something very important. Although he, like all of us, are human beings, sought happiness, he actually was looking in all the wrong directions. The failures has also led him to embark on a lifelong study of mindfulness and to want to pass on what he learned, first to his kids, and now to us, to the rest of the world. John graduated from Boston College with highest honors in philosophy and political science, and Harvard Law School, cum laude. He works as a trial lawyer at DLA Piper, where he's also the global co-chair of the firm's intellectual property group, and serves on its executive committee. John is a longtime student of some of the world's top meditation teacher, and he and his wife, Cheryl, have developed a curriculum in mindfulness for schools that is currently in use in Sea Change, a small private school in Del Mar, California. John, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to have you. And after reading your intro to the audience here, I just wanted to say it's pretty impressive what you've done. And I had kind of a little chuckle when I read that you have succeeded big time, but also failed big time. And I thought that that might be a really nice place to start.
Well, I mean, it's kind of true with everyone in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get some measures of success and some measures of the opposite. That's the way life is. And actually, that's what caused me to write the book. I was going through a challenging time in my life. I was going through a divorce and other challenges. And I started learning a lot about mindfulness, going to retreats and reading many, many books on the subject. And I wanted to pass along what I was learning to my kids because it was of great benefit to me at the time. And I couldn't find a single book or even a couple of books that explained what I was learning simply and clearly to a Western audience, as my daughters, of course, were. And so I started writing them emails on Father's Day of 2009. And over the course of the next couple of years, I wrote them several hundred of them. And people told me I should, people that shared these emails said I should write a, I should turn them into a book. And so that's how the book came about.
Ah, okay. So you were in, you were kind of pushed to put your knowledge onto paper for others, right?
Yeah, I basically collected up a couple of hundred emails, and they ended up into 40 chapters.
Wow, that is awesome. I look forward to hearing more. Why do you think so many of us are exposed, though, to this concept?
Well,
that you talk about in this book.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a recent phenomenon. I think
okay.
that until even, I mean, until the last, I would say, 5 or 7 years, mindfulness was not a topic that was at the center of discussion here in the West, and certainly not in the United States. It had creeped into our culture in various areas, but it certainly wasn't a central focus of the discussion. But mm-hmm. then starting, I think, in around 2014, when, you know, mindfulness was on the cover of Time magazine, the next year it was in about 150 articles in the New York Times, and it's only gone up from there. That it's a relatively recent phenomenon that what this book is about has really entered into the modern dialogue.
Yeah, I really agree with you. We hear it finally more and more, but there's still a lot of skepticism around it, right? And that's why it's so great to have people like yourself that actually can talk about their experience. So kudos to you for doing that, because we need it here in the Western world. So may I ask, what changes have you seen in children who have been able to internalize some of the lessons that you've outlined in your book?
Well, we certainly see an increased ability to focus and ability to pay attention. We see an increase in compassion and self-care and the ability to relate with others. And those observations are consistent with the larger studies that have actually been done on using very basic and simple mindfulness techniques in the school setting.
Wow. I really like that because I can just imagine, not just for the student itself, but also for the teacher. It must be just so amazing to have a student be able to be really quiet and to really focus, not just for the student, but also for every other student and the teacher around them. Is there a practical tip that you could give right now for us listeners, just having a child at home that's unfocused, something that they can do to be really mindful and focus on the task at hand?
Well, I mean, the tool mm-hmm. that is provided us and is one that we don't have to turn on. It's one that we don't have to recharge. It's one that we don't have to go find because it's always with us, is our breath. Our breath, as long as we're alive, is with us. Mm-hmm. And it's a tool that you can use for focusing your attention off any troublesome or worrisome or disturbing or fearful or otherwise stressful thought. And that's a main technique that we employ and teach at SeaChange, is getting the students to use their breath to train their attention and create a space in which they can make a choice as to whether or not to continue to be troubled or continue to be captured by any thought that enters your head, which is basically what most people in the West, that's the way most of us live our lives, getting yeah. captured by thoughts that enter our head, but to create a space.
I love that you said breath. I really, really love that. So for everyone out there, it's so simple and we have it, like you said, John, but we really forget it. I mean, it's like, it's so on automatic that we don't pay attention to it, but it really, I use it myself, that trick a lot. So I thank you for saying that, because I think for anyone who hears this, we just really forget to practice it. Correct?
Yes. And also people don't think about it. I mean, they don't mm-hmm. think to do it.
Yeah, we forget we have it. It's we're on. If I may say so, it almost feels like we're on automatic pilot with ourselves without having the need to have a car. We are on automatic pilot, right? And the more thoughts we have, the more we're all over the map, and we forget that breath is something just by thinking of it kind of calms you down, right? So I thank you for saying that, because we need to be reminded, all of us.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm very curious, because I love children, love schools, and myself, I'm always going to new schools. So I am so interested to learn a little bit more about your SeaChange school. And is it really called like that, SeaChange?
Yeah, it's called SeaChange Preparatory.
Oh, I love and the name.
The name has a number of, it's appropriate for a number of reasons. One is a mindfulness is a main component of it. And at least in our current environment, bringing mindfulness to young people is sort of a sea change in their lives. Change meaning a major switch in what they've been doing before, because most of, in fact, all of the traditional schools that I know of really don't have mindfulness as a component, mm-hmm. to the school. So in that sense, it's a sea change. And I can explain to you a little bit more about what the mindfulness program is. If you're interested.
I would love to. I would love to. And so would our listeners. Yes, please.
Okay. So And it also will lead me into some of the other unique aspects of the school.
Okay.
So basically, it has two or three different parts to it. The most direct part is three mornings a week. We meet at the school at 7 a.m. The school is about 150 yards from the ocean. So
okay.
we walk down to a park that is about 100 feet from the ocean and gather in a circle. And for a half an hour, we do mindful meditation, guided mindfulness meditation, largely focused on the breath, largely focused on concentration type techniques. Those of you that are familiar with Jon Kabat-Zinn, a lot of the techniques that he teaches are ones that we've used but have adapted. And we have a more or less developed curriculum that will cover 40 weeks, basically two school semesters. So there's a half an hour guided meditation. After that, the students, physical fitness is a huge part of the school program. And after that, the kids jump in the water and swim in the open ocean for between 45 minutes and an hour.
Wow.
My wife was a swimmer at Ohio State, and the entire faculty has their triathletes or other swimming capability, and we have an ocean swim coach who actually has himself personally swam the English Channel. So the
My goodness, yeah, athletes,
yeah. But we were talking about the breath. The great thing about swimming is you have to breathe, and the great thing about swimming, particularly ocean swimming, is you have to overcome challenges. And in some cases, fear. We do relays, and we travel the globe swimming relay swims that are between 15 and 30 miles in the open ocean.
Wow.
And so we train for that. And I can talk to you more about that aspect.
And may I just ask the age group, just so that I get a better visual of that? What's the age group of these students that do this?
Yeah, it's generally speaking, fourth grade through high school.
Fourth grade, that young.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
amazing. No, we just swam. We set a world record about a month ago swimming between two Italian islands in the Mediterranean that are 15 miles apart. And one of the kids on the relay was an 11-year-old girl who 8 months ago had never swam at all. And she swam an hour three times, separated by 5 hours. So what we do is we have six-person relays. And so each kid swims an hour and then rests five. And then you continue the rotation until you finish the swim. And
wow.
And so then there's a, in addition to the three mindfulness meditation training sessions a week, there's a 1 hour mindfulness oriented seminar that's cross age during the course of the week. And then each of our teachers are certified mindfulness instructors, and so it's kind of in the air as you kind of walk around the school. And then to just round out the picture, the school has a super high quality arts program, music and painting, professional musician and a professional artist each teaching. And then it has a 1-to-5 student teacher ratio. And so the quality of the academics is very, very high. And so like in the last 3 years, our students have gotten into University of Michigan Engineering, Berkeley Engineering, UCLA, UC Davis, CSD, Colby College, Boston University, Boston College, And so the academics of the school is quite high as well. So that's kind of an overall picture of the school, and mindfulness is obviously a key component of it.
I'm really impressed. And how does the training of mindfulness help them to achieve these amazing records? Because I just cannot imagine swimming in. I love the sea. I love the ocean, but I just have a really hard time picturing how hard it is to overcome an entire hour in the open ocean.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm honest. I don't think I could do it. I'm not an athlete, obviously, but still. So what is it in the training that they are able to use their mindfulness and to achieve this? Tell us.
Yeah, well, you absolutely could do it. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that you could do it. We have 11-year-olds do it, 10-year-olds do it, and there's two parts to it. There's a mental training, which is recognizing that much of our fear is misplaced.
Okay.
Most of what we fear is just not based on reality. It's based upon our imagination.
Okay.
So there's a mental aspect to it, and there's a physical aspect to it. It is challenging, to swim for an hour, even in a pool or in the open ocean. But just because it's challenging doesn't mean it's impossible or not useful to do. And so that's kind of a core aspect of the school.
Okay.
Where the kind of the sub name of the kind of the meme to the school is actually I can't, which is that whenever you tell one of our kids that they can't do something, they'll look at you and say, well, actually, I can't.
I love that. But how do you keep the self-doubt out of there? Because self-doubt, even sometimes if you, I'm just hearing this a lot when I'm in school, even if you can take away the fear, sometimes that self-doubt creeps in.
Right.
So how, if I may ask, how do you deal with that? Because especially, I'm not even talking about adults for a second, but just in children and students, how do you deal with that self-doubt, that nagging little voice?
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because in the concentration meditations that we do, one of them that basically is the theme for a week or even 2 weeks is exactly what you're talking about, is the self-doubt. Because fear and self-doubt, you're right, are two of the most significant impediments to success in life, really.
Yeah.
And so what we find is the combination of the mindfulness along with open ocean swimming, which is a perfect opportunity to eliminate self-doubt, because it is a very challenging thing. But it's very, very doable. It's much more doable than people realize. Obviously, you need people who know what they're doing to train the students. And you need to, take proper care and have proper training. But with all that, it's entirely doable. And the great thing about it is it's an exercise. Not in swimming. Swimming is just the physical aspect that you choose to use. It's an exercise in overcoming self-doubt. It's an exercise in overcoming fear. And so,
go ahead.
Well, the way we look at it is, if we can instill the ability to create that space, to release the fear, to release that internal incessant chatter of self-doubt, and allow the more positive thoughts to prevail.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use swimming and this type of activity as a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then other things that the students will confront, like challenging exams, like going away to school, you know, in a different environment. They'll be able to overcome the fear and self-doubt associated with that. Because after all, fear is fear and self-doubt is self-doubt. It takes different forms. It has different objects.
Mm-hmm.
But at bottom, they're, you know, emotions that we all have to deal with.
Yes, they definitely are. But we also live in a world, I find this true too. Let's say that a child or an adult overcomes self-doubt, right? We finally feel secure and in who we are and what we are, and we put the fear aside. We have the courage to move on. The self-doubt is kind of overcome. But to others, that sometimes makes that confidence that you get in yourself afterwards looks to others sometimes as conceited, you know, that we're kind of stuck up and who is this person that is so secure in who they are? And how, I almost want to say, how do we teach that that's okay? That you are not conceited. You're just really very confident human being. And I wonder if students deal with that, you know, between each other sometimes. Maybe not at your school because everyone is mindful, but when they go out outside of the school and meet other people, I'm sure they're much more conscious of who they are because of what they experience in your program than other children, right? So how do they balance that so that other children then don't put them down and say, hey, you're, you know, let's take you a peg down?
Well, I mean, that's just more mindfulness. I mean, that's just, you know, being mindful and dealing with other people in a straight up, honest fashion. So, you know, compassion and honesty and collaborative approach to life are all values. I think I've now listed all of the values that we have at Sea Change.
Okay. Okay.
That we try to instill in the students.
I love that you're an advocate for positive thinking and positive change. And how do you encourage people not to control their thoughts, though? To not control that thought of self-doubt or the negative parts that we have? Because we're brought up with the negative beliefs that our parents already have, right? They're given to us automatically.
Right. And so the way we try to approach it is to basically try to get the students to understand, and this is a really core part of my book, is that you can't really control your thoughts, but you can control what you do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the notion that I promote in the book and that we promote in the school is that the thoughts that happen in your mind don't necessarily need to be credited. They don't necessarily need to take you over and capture you. And while you can't necessarily control which thoughts occur, you always have the opportunity to observe the thoughts that occur, not act on them, not be captured by them, create a space within which you can make a choice. And that if you don't pay attention to a thought, you don't honor it, if you don't get captured by it, it'll lose its power and it'll go away. And you can then better effectuate intentions that you have developed that will cause other more positive thoughts to occur, and those can be honored.
Okay.
So that's basically the approach that we take to mindfulness, and the approach that's outlined in my book, which is, you know, more or less the approach of Jon Kabat-Zinn and Jack Kornfield and Gil Fronsdale, and, you know, the Western mindfulness, the current Western mindfulness movement, I would say.
It's almost like you're describing, and tell me if I'm wrong, you're almost describing like a sort of gymnastics in your head where you're learning every day to let the thought go by, let it go, and not react to the thought. Am I on the right track there?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the way I would regard the first half of mindfulness. The first half of mindfulness is being able to pay attention to mm-hmm. your inner and outer experience without reactivity, without judgment, with openness and curiosity.
Absolutely.
That's the start of it. And then once you do that, there's a space created where you can make a choice and you can choose what intention you want to fill your life with. And so what we try to teach the students is things like courage and mm-hmm. compassion and aspiring to do your best and inspiring others to do their best and being kind to people are okay. intentions that mm-hmm. if you are mindful of those intentions, you will speak and act in a certain way that will be more healthy and more likely lead to success in life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're going to take a little break. But before we take the little break, John, don't go away because we want to hear more about you and your book. I am going to talk a little bit about a free webinar, How to Clear Out Brain Fog, Obliterate Anxiety and Destroy Depression Without Toxic or Addictive Prescription Medication. For all the listeners of Answers for the Family, you get a free access to this masterclass that will be held on Friday, September 7th. This course normally sells for $197 and will be given free by Dr. John DeWitt to all the people that listen to this radio show. So just go to bit.ly, so that is bit.ly/brainbuilders to register. And you will learn more about Dr. DeWitt. He also partnered with Cambridge Brain Sciences, and they're offering this free cognitive assessment to all attendees of the webinar. So again, at the end of this show, register for the class at bit.ly/brainbuilders. Bit.ly is bit.ly/brainbuilders. And otherwise, we will make sure that it's posted too, and you will be able to take your free cognitive assessment on Friday, September 7th, 2018. And now we are ready for a commercial break.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. And for those who are just tuning in, our guest today is John Alec. And we're in the middle of talking about his book and the school that he's created in San Diego called Sea Change. And we are talking about mindfulness. John, you are still there, I hope.
I'm here.
Super. Thank you. Yeah, we just have to always break for a commercial, but I am really excited to get straight back into it. I have a question that I'm dying to ask you. How can we teach our children and us? Because we keep talking about children due to the title of your book, but myself included, how can we teach everyone that our intrinsic value has nothing to do with our achievements? I find this a really big one and so important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really, really challenging. In the West, we've gotten to the point where we derive our value from what we do and whether or not we do things as well as others expect us to. And so what ends up happening is inevitably, if you try to do challenging things in the world, you're not going to succeed. And then we fall into the trap of low self-esteem and low self-value. And then we fall into the trap of not trying to do challenging things because we fear that we'll fail, and that will in turn lower our self-esteem. So it's a really challenging subject.
I just want to catch this before I forget it, but in today's world, don't we reward every single child? Don't we even get rewarded in our work the moment we achieve something? So how it is so hard not to think that we are still valuable, but I haven't achieved something just because I turned 30 or just because I'm in the seventh grade instead of the fourth grade. You know, how could you just lift the veil a little bit to give us a glimpse of how we do that concretely in your book and with the mindfulness steps?
Yeah, the chapter that I have on this is the truth will win out if you let it. And it's chapter 9. And basically, it's the idea that we have to separate our intrinsic value from our external achievements or external activities. And basically, because you see, it doesn't help ever to tie our self-worth to achieving, because we think that it will help us achieve better because it will beat us like a stick to achieve more. But it really actually works out the opposite. So what you know, I've tried to lay out in my book is the notion that our intrinsic value is always there. It's sort of like trying to explain to somebody why red is red. There's no way to explain it. It just is. We always are of the highest internal extrinsic value. And what happens is sometimes we develop behaviors or habits that are not so useful, that are not so helpful. And it's the behaviors or habits that are negative and that we need to change. They're not part of our intrinsic value. They're not part of who we actually are. They're just things that we've acquired and that we can discard, like an old sweater that no longer is useful. Dividing the thing between unhelpful and unskillful behaviors and intrinsic value actually makes it easier to change the unskillful behaviors because they're not part of you. They're just something that you have adopted temporarily.
Yeah. I love that you just said that, because I always try to explain to the child that just because you did something, like your behavior was bad yesterday, does not make you a bad person. So I love that you talk about this behavior that way, that it's not attached to you. It's just something that you can change. Love that. That's very, very good for the listener to know. Really love that. Okay. My next question is, why is it so important to have goals than to achieve them?
Yeah, so that goes into a little bit of what I was talking about. It's super important to have goals. It's super important to have a direction and have a hope and dreams. Our lives would be hollow without that. But it's totally wrong to have our happiness depend upon our achieving them, because there's so many things that can get in the way of our achieving our goals other than our own efforts. All kinds of things can keep us from achieving goals that we set out. And we don't want to discourage choosing lofty goals, God forbid. We want to choose lofty goals, but we want to have our moment-to-moment happiness be dependent not upon achieving goals, but upon having moment-by-moment intentions that we can definitely achieve. For example, being kind to people as we walk the path up the mountain that we're trying to get to the top of. Being compassionate, aspiring to do our best, helping others as we go, inspiring others as we go, being courageous and choosing things that are of long-standing value. All of those things are things that we can do immediately in our moment-to-moment intention. And if we properly select them and carry through with those moment-by-moment intentions, we are successful regardless of whether or not we've, you know, made it to the top of the mountain. Because, by the way, once you get to the top of the mountain, you're not going to stay there. You're going to have to go to another top of the mountain. So there's always a new goal to achieve. So it's a fiction to think that achieving a goal is going to give you happiness in the first place, because there's always going to be something else to do.
True. Absolutely true. And I love that you talk about kindness, of course, because that's basically what I do. So I love that you say that that's more important. Success is basically the intangibles of just the journey of the goals. That's basically what I'm hearing, right?
Yeah, the way I think about it is we have moment-to-moment intentions, and then we have long-term goals. And the moment-to-moment intentions are really what is going to deliver moment-to-moment happiness.
I love that. Did everyone hear that? Moment-to-moment intentions. That is beautifully said, John. Love it. I will take that to heart, too. I believe that happiness is a moment. And yeah, so the moment-to-moment intentions makes total sense. We're very close to having the hour up, but what I really quickly would like to get in is we have two questions from the audience, and I just, after that, I want to ask you one more thing about what you hope readers will take away from your book, okay, John?
Okay.
But sure. I want to get in this question because it's always so important. that they know that we're listening to them and that their questions can be asked.
Okay.
So here it says, finally, mindfulness is becoming an accepted topic in the therapeutic field. For so long, it was thrown into the woo-woo pile and not appreciated how much it can help all ages. A psychologist in Anaheim, I have made the discussion of mindfulness and meditation standard recommendations for my client. I see immediate results in the decrease of stress in all who take my advice seriously. Can you quickly describe the demographic appropriate range? Is it more for parents, as the title seems to indicate, or will it fit people without children and the 30-somethings? I have quite a few of them. This is Terrence in California.
Right. So that great question. The book was written, as I mentioned earlier, from emails that were sent to three of my daughters who at the time were adolescent students. And so the core of the book is actually directed to adolescent students. But then when we wrote the book, we were very mindful that it would be a really good book for parents and grandparents. So essentially, the book has three audiences, really.
Okay.
Adolescent students or even younger, because at Sea Change, we use the book with fourth graders and up. Secondly, parents, and thirdly, grandparents.
Okay. And what would you say if a 30-year-old that didn't have a child would pick this up? It's still kind of interesting, right? Because we grow up at different stages in our life, and there's different stages that we might struggle with, even at 30, right?
Yeah, essentially the book is intended to deliver the core of mindfulness to the widest possible audience.
Okay.
Of any age.
Okay. And very quickly, last question. What do you hope readers will take away from your book, and how can they get your book?
They get the book from Amazon, or the book has a website, which is creatively named 40 Things I Wish I Told My Kids. And what I hope people take away is the notion that mindfulness is a very, very powerful tool for your personal happiness, mm-hmm. and that it is actually relatively easy to get started with it. It's a little bit of a challenge because it's a different mode of thinking than what in the West we've been brought up with. But once you get the hang of it, it actually is helpful really almost immediately.
Thank you, John. So John Alec, our guest, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. Go to his website, 40 Things I Wish I Told My Kids.com. And we are coming to a close. Please tune in and put it in your calendar for next Monday, when our special guest will be Saida Haziz, author of The Healing, One Woman's Journey from Poverty to Inner Riches. And please visit our archives and past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitchers, YouTube, or Vimeo. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. The next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, remember to stop by, like our page, and check out our latest posts. Thank you so much, and spread the word.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.